Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. So one of the biggest causes of contention in a marriage is money. And the reason why that is because when people come into a marriage, they come in with often very different ideas of how money should be managed or the role it should play in your life. So, you know, you might have someone who's a spendthrift who likes to, you know, circulate money into the system, while you have others who are, they're frugal and they're a tightwad. And that can really cause contention. Or you might have individuals who they want to spend their money on different things, right? And you have to figure out how to reconcile those two things. So if you're married, you understand, you probably have had those arguments or discussions with your significant other about money. If you are about to get married, this is a conversation you need to have with your prospective spouse so that you guys are on the same page when it comes to finances, so you can hit the ground running with your marriage and avoid some of those really big blow-up arguments that often happen about money. Anyways, my guests today on the podcast are a couple who had one of those big financial catastrophes right at the beginning of their relationship, and they had to figure out a way to navigate through it. And in the process, they learned a lot along the way, and they wrote a book sharing what they learned. Their names are Derek and Carrie Olson. They're a married couple, and they're the authors of the book One Bed, One Bank Account: Better Conversations on Money and Marriage. And today's podcast, we discuss tips on how to avoid the big brawls about money in a marriage or a relationship. And what it all comes down to is conversations. And in the process of discussing money, what we'll find out is that it can actually, you'll be discussing other aspects of your relationship that aren't directly related to money, or related to money, but are bigger picture. Really great podcast, a lot of great takeaways. So without further ado, Derek and Carrie Olson, One Bed, One Bank Account. All right, Derek and Carrie Olson, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
All right, so you are a husband-wife team who started a podcast, wrote a book about marriage and money. And this is possibly a tense subject for a lot of our listeners out there. There's probably a lot of guys out there who've had a lot of fights with their wives or arguments or maybe just tense, awkward silence about money. Can you tell us why you two wrote this book? I'm sure you're most people who, the reason we write this book, there was a moment in your relationship where you're like, we had a problem, we solved it, here's how we did it. Is that what happened?
Right. I don't know about solving it, but we definitely had a problem that we addressed. And I'll tell the short story, the short version. Whenever we were engaged to be married, Carrie owned a house that was in danger of being foreclosed on. And it was literally within a month of our wedding date, it was going to be foreclosed on. And so here she is bringing that into the marriage. And I'm on the receiving end going, holy cow, that's crazy. I never imagined that I would have a foreclosure on my hands and, sort of inheriting that through marriage. So as we were engaged and planning our wedding and all of that, we were also fighting this enormous financial battle. And the cool thing about fighting that together was that we learned so much about each other and about our history, our family history, our past, and just the way we handled conflicts and our views on money and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, what we ended up was a short sale, which is still terrible financially, but not quite as bad as a foreclosure. And through that whole process, what the surprising thing was that it actually turned out really good for our relationship, which I was not really expecting. But luckily enough, we approached this problem as a team, and we worked together to handle this situation. And I just couldn't believe how much of a positive impact it had on our relationship. And so going from that, we started coaching some other couples, and we helped other couples through similar situations. And then we've had more couples since then reach out to us and share their story with us. And so that's where the book came from. And that's basically why we wrote the book, to help other couples.
Awesome. So that's intense. Like a short sale, people get divorced over that.
Yes.
Sort of thing. And you guys are doing it while you're getting married. What was the key? Was it just an attitude adjustment, or was it communication? Was that the key through this whole entire process?
Yeah, so it definitely didn't start off perfect. You know, Derek told the short story of how in the end it ended up being really great for us, but there were definitely those awkward moments, those feelings of, you know, just insecurity and shame, even embarrassment. And, you know, I'm sure Derek felt very, you know, it was just very unfair for him, you know, to have to, you know, he had no debt whatsoever. And, you know, by marrying me, he was like he said, inheriting that. So it didn't start off easy. I think the commitment to you know, looking at each other and saying, we're going to fight this together, that was key. Because when we realized that the enemy wasn't each other, but the enemy was the situation, it was the, you know, we could kind of focus our energy on the, you know, the short sale and the process instead of each other. And that was a huge thing for us, was when we realized, okay, this wall doesn't have to be between us. We can be both on the same side of the wall and put the situation on the other side and focus our energy there. So I think that was really the kind of the turning point for us, when we stopped kind of like blaming each other or even, you know, being totally defensive, and we were able to focus on the problem and put our energy there.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk more about how you do that, because that it's easy to say, like, that's what we got to do. But then it's like, that's really hard to put into practice. But, excuse me. I'm curious, in your experience, like in your own experience, but also in the experience of coaching other couples, what are the biggest conflicts about money that you see pop up over and over and over again?
Well, I think it just all kind of stems from a lack of communication and a bit of, you know, what's mine is mine, and don't try to tell me what to do with my money, which is understandable. Nobody really wants to be told what to do, or with money, a lot of times it's told what not to do, you know, what you can't do. But, and like we've seen time and time again, when you get in there and start talking about it and create a budget and get on a plan and start communicating, it's not as scary as it might sound, and it's not as just, you know, restrictive as it might sound. Do you want to tell the story about that one couple?
Sure. Yeah, because, you know, I can speak from my own personal experience too. I think one of the hugest issues is not feeling like you can be honest with each other, or feeling like you're going to be judged. So you feel like you have to hide, which is never a good thing to bring into a relationship at any point. I don't know if we necessarily need to tell the story. Oh, sure. But
right. And is what I think is interesting, you've kind of hinted to this as well, is that, you know, money is this controversial. And the reason I think money is so controversial is because that it's so tied up, even though we say, you know, we talk about, oh, money's not that important, but like, it really is. It's tied up into our aspirations. It's tied into our values. It's tied into memories, emotions. Yeah. Emotions. And so like, you know, you guys talked about this a little bit about the Christmas gifting, right? In your family, Carrie, as opposed into Derek's family. And like,
right,
you were newly married, and like, Carrie wanted to set aside this giant budget for Christmas gifts, right? And you were like, wait a minute, that's we don't have that much money. Why are we doing this? So talk a little bit about that. What was the emotion for you, Carrie, that you were invested in, why you thought it was so important to, you know, spend some money on Christmas? Because even if you didn't have that much at the time in your relationship.
Yeah, I think this is one of the beautiful things about money. One of the things that we love so much is that when you start talking about money, you always end up talking about something else. So, you know, you come into it with, we're budgeting, but then you go into all of these weird, you know, history background places. And so for me, and my family, what we did at Christmas was we splurged. And even though we should not have, it was not a wise thing to do. This wasn't like, you know, well thought out, but that's just what we did. That's how I was raised. And so for me, there was a lot of worth that I, for me, that was tied up in gift giving and gift receiving. So, you know, kind of, if you've heard of love languages, I felt loved by receiving gifts and being able to give gifts to others, simply because that's the way I was raised. And Derek's family wasn't like that. And even now, you know, we're going back home to Oklahoma for his Christmas soon, and we got an email recently that said, everyone buy a $20 Dirty Santa gift, and that's what we're doing. And that's how they do Christmas. So just merging those two ideas was really, really hard. And so we just had to have that conversation. And you have to take it beyond like, oh, it's not personal. He's not trying to hurt me by not buying me gifts all the time. That's just the way that he was raised.
Yeah.
And being okay with that.
Yeah, and so to add to that, I think that what we're getting at here is not the difference between, well, my family, we get everyone a gift, and so it ends up being like, you know, hundreds of dollars or whatever. Oh, but, and then in my family, we just do one gift, and it's only $20. It goes beyond that. So you can argue about that, which way is right, and, you know, I don't want to do that. That's too expensive and all that. But once you uncover the reason and the history behind why you do those things, then you can have a greater understanding of each other. And once you go a little bit deeper into that conversation, that's where this kind of stuff can really be beneficial for your relationship.
Right. You learn more about, because when you're talking about money,
exactly,
you're not talking about money, right?
Exactly.
Right. But let's talk about this. Okay. You know, this is for couples who are married, but it seems like you should be having some conversations about money before you get married.
Yeah.
Because it seems like, you're colliding, not only, you know, you're not colliding possibly bank accounts and all the right retirement accounts and debt and things like that, but you're also bringing together different ideas about money, different values about money. And it'd be nice to get on like a, you know, start the relationship on a nice pace, right? So you're all on the same page. So what kind of conversations about money should couples have before they get married?
Yeah, it's a really, really important question. And like, you know, when you start dating somebody, you have conversations like, what's your favorite movie? And what kind of music do you listen to? You know, and those are small, but those are important. They you learn about each other's personalities. And if we're going to talk about stuff like that, I really think that we need to be talking about important stuff like, how much debt do you have? And how much, you know, what do you think about savings? And what do you think about retirement? And so I think that that stuff is so incredibly important that it really needs to be discussed. But if not before you get engaged, then definitely before you get married. Because if you don't, I mean, my gosh, if you're just unaware of not even like a specific amount of debt, but your attitude towards it. So for example, I have $60,000 in student loans and I'm paying it off as fast as I can. That's one thing. But if you have $60,000 in student loans and you don't care and you're not paying it off and you don't care if it goes into default, you know, that's a whole nother thing. And it's all about your attitude towards the financial situation. So my suggestion is the more you talk about money and the more that you disclose before you get married, the better. And again, it's not necessarily about the numbers. It's about the attitude.
Right. And like, well, I mean, at what point in your relationship before, like pre-marriage, should you bring this up, right? Like, you don't want to do it like on the fourth date when things are getting kind of serious, right? And like, okay, let's talk, because that's just going to creep people out. And then, you know, so I mean, at what point in the relationship should you bring it up?
So, I think one of the most important things is to be observing each other constantly. So from date one to whenever it actually comes up formally, you watch and see like what kind of things that you're, the person you're dating is spending money on, so that it's always, you know, in your mind. And then we kind of draw the lines between, you know, engagement. So pre-engagement, I think that it should come up. Everybody's dating, you know, timeline is different. So maybe you dated for a year. So I can't give you an actual timeline of, you know, fourth date or eighth date. but when that feels right to you, you can bring it up specifically. And I think before engagement, you can talk about it in general, you know, yes, I have debt. Yes, I have a lot of debt. This is what I'm doing about it. These are my goals and that kind of thing. But you don't need to break out the laptop and pull up your bank accounts yet. But we would say that after you're engaged, absolutely pull up the numbers. And you can even start working through that, you know, as you're definitely intending to get married. So those are kind of the lines that we draw.
That's actually a great idea. So you're like, you know, start working through the numbers together on a, you know, to sort out any financial problems before, or just like at least get something, a plan in place, so as you, when you get married, you guys are hitting the ground running.
At the very least, be aware of what you're going into. Because the thing is, this is where it doesn't make sense to me. If this is such an important part of a relationship, and if you're planning on being with somebody for the rest of your life, it doesn't make sense to hold something that's so important back until after you're married. These things are so important. They need to be disclosed earlier. I mean, not the earlier the better, not on like you said, the first date or the fourth date, but I think sooner rather than later, because they're so important. And if it's going to come up anyway, we'll just go ahead and bring it up so that you can see if this is something that we can get past and we can both be okay with, or is this going to be such a stumbling block that we don't need to, you know, one or both of us isn't even comfortable with moving forward with the relationship. Eventually, you're going to have to figure that out.
We got to talk about money. That's easier said than done. But like for a lot of people, like they don't like to talk about money because it was a taboo subject for them growing up, right? Like their parents didn't talk to them about money. If it was like in hushed tones. So how do you start that conversation with someone who is reluctant to have that conversation?
So I think that it's really important to, for someone like that, it's important to start with either emotions or, you know, feelings or with goals. So you can say, you know, instead of, hey, let's look at our budget, it's what do we want in life? Where do we want to be in 5 years? What sort of house do we want to have? Because if you're uncomfortable with money, you can probably still say like what kind of car you want to drive. And then from there, you can go into like, how do we do that? And then start kind of getting into the nuts and bolts of it. But then also it can be helpful just to appeal to, hey, this is really, really important to me. And I know that this is uncomfortable for you. So because you love me, can we set aside some time to talk about this? Or can we make this a part of our ongoing conversation in our relationship? Because I don't want this to turn into a disaster later on. So just appealing to those things, I think, can be helpful.
Gotcha. And I imagine this conversation about money it's not a one and done thing. Like you have to keep that going. So is it something you do informally, or do you guys set aside like, it's the third Wednesday of the month. We do our financial check-in as a couple. What do you guys do to keep the conversation about money going?
Yeah. So we basically do it monthly, and it just all kind of stems around the monthly budget. Because when you sit down together and do a monthly budget, you're going to eventually, through that process, talk about everything. You're going to talk about the kids. If you have kids, you're going to talk about the household bills, any debt that you're trying to pay off, retirement, savings, income. It's all discussed through the budget. And because, you know, money changes and life changes, maybe not monthly, but, you know, certainly every year something happens that's kind of out of the norm. I think it's really important for the conversation to be ongoing, just again, for the simple fact that things change. And so if you stay on that together, and also, you know, another reason that it's important to have it be an ongoing conversation is that it's really good for your relationship. That, again, the common theme that's even in our book is that money is not necessarily only about money. It's about your relationship. So having a set time every month where you sit down with your spouse and go over the budget and talk about all those things is just a really good kickstart or sort of a refocusing for your relationship as a whole too.
So you guys budget, like, do you guys recommend like couples sitting down together and budgeting, like talking like every through line by line, like here's what we're going to spend?
Absolutely. And, you know, for us, we would sit down, both of us together, every single month for I don't know, 3 or 4 years, the first 3 or 4 years, and then we had a baby. And since then, as you know, time gets very limited after that. And so since then, it's mostly been me where I will do the recap of the previous month and put it all in the categories, and then I'll draw up a basic budget. I'll do that on my own, and then Carrie and I will sit down real quick, and I'm basically just updating and informing Carrie and making sure if she has anything that she wants to change or that I, you know, overlooked or something like that. That's fine, because right now with having a one-year-old in the house, it's really hard to find an hour or two a month to sit down together. But as long as you're both being informed and updating each other at the very least, that's what we suggest doing that monthly.
Okay, so yeah, you're saying it's okay to like delegate financial duties within a marriage, right?
Like, oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, if one of you is better at doing it or just enjoys it more, and the other one, you know, isn't as excited, that's fine. But that doesn't mean that you have to completely exclude them from the process. They should be at least informed as to what's going on.
Well, and have input, and not have just input, like, this is what's happening.
Yeah, no, not informed like I'm going to tell you how it is, but, you know, yeah.
We're buying a boat, all right?
No, yeah. Exactly.
No.
I'm informing you. I've informed you that we're buying a boat.
My duty here is done.
Exactly.
You are informed.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, like in our family, like Kate, like money just makes her eyes glaze over.
Yeah.
And I actually enjoy it. I get like getting into the accounts and like budgeting and doing all that stuff. So that's how we split it up. And yeah, like I'll tell Kate, you know, a few times a month, like, here we are, here's what the finances, here's what we're doing. And that's it. And it's not really like a formal thing. We sit down, like, this is our financial meeting. Just like during this life, here we are, this is what we're doing. So
sure.
And yeah, it works for us. It's worked for us so far.
And that's what's important, is that you're having the conversations, whether or not it's a formal conversation or not, like you said, find what works for you. But I think that the more that you do it, like Derek and I, we talk about money all the time because we have done it formally so much. So now just in everyday conversation, we just talk about
it's a habit.
So I think, yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. So yeah, maybe start off making it very formal, right? Until it becomes just like something you do.
Exactly. And let me sort of like back that up, because that's right. I really do think that, especially at the beginning, let's just say for 6 months or maybe even a year, even if you know, the one or the other doesn't really enjoy it and would rather not, I still think it's important for that person to see what goes on. To create a budget and to actually be involved and maybe actually do it themselves, even if it's only like that for like 6 months, just so that person has the awareness of what goes into it, you know, so that when you do, you know, convert to a more casual, just conversation, you know, updating every once in a while, at least they have a frame of reference for what you're talking about, even though, you know, from then on, for the rest of your marriage, it might just be one or the other who's actually doing the budget.
Gotcha. So in the midst of these conversations, besides budgeting, I'm sure there is goal setting involved, right? So what kind of, and I think it's interesting, whenever you read like personal finance blogs and like personal finance books, they usually talk about like a single person's making these personal finance goals. But when you stop and think about it, a lot of people, like, they're attached to another person, right? So they have, like, when they're making a goal, like, they're making it a goal for more than just them. So taking that into account, what sort of goals should a married couple be making that maybe perhaps someone who's single might not make?
That's that's a good question, because that's where it gets really complicated. It's a lot more straightforward when it's just one person making a decision for themselves. But when it's one or two people making decisions for the both of them, that's obviously where this gets more complicated. And I think in a lot of ways, it makes it a lot more fun to have two people involved. But when you set those goals, you can set big picture goals maybe once a year. For example, how much do we want to grow our net worth? What kind of retirement do we want to have in 30 years from now? And all that kind of stuff really informs your monthly budget. And from there, it really informs your day-to-day purchases and your day-to-day decision-making. And so I think that big picture stuff, if you visit it once a year and talk about, when you have those conversations, you can go back to talking about feelings and what are your wants and desires for the future. When you talk about big picture goals like that, and those can be really fun conversations to talk about stuff like that way off in the future, big picture goals. And so I think that also having those big picture goals together, keeping them in mind, actually makes the day-to-day stuff easier. Or more enjoyable, at least, when you realize, hey, we're on the same team and we've got the same goals and we've agreed to and that we're excited about, it makes the day-to-day budgeting or the month-to-month budgeting, you know, it makes it more meaningful. So it makes it a bit more enjoyable. Oh, yeah, we're not just crunching numbers here and creating this boring budget. This is actually a foundational thing that's going to lead towards us having this kind of lifestyle that we want together for our entire marriage and our entire life.
Right, right. Yeah, because I mean, when you have those conversations, like you're probably having some really big picture conversations about your financial goals. Like, for example, you might have the conversation, well, do we want one of us to stay home to take care of the kids?
Right.
If that's if that's the case, then we're going to have to cut back on things so we can afford that, right?
Yeah, and see, that's huge. And I'm glad you kind of brought up that scenario, because that's something that's not so far off, like retirement. That's something that's like today or less than 5 years for a lot of people. If you're just now starting out or you're just now newlywed, that's something that's going to be on your plate immediately. And that whole, one spouse staying home to take care of the kids full time, man, you're right. I mean, that changes everything drastically. I mean, like, it's like slamming on the brakes, that's a pretty scary thing to do, to just slam on the brakes on a car, because it's really immediate and it really gets your attention. So something like that, having a goal like that is something that we talk about in the book specifically, about whether one of you is going to stay home or not, and how that affects all kinds of things.
Right, right. And then there's other goals, like, if one of you might have a goal, like, we're going to pay off our house as soon as possible.
Yeah. Right?
That sounds pretty awesome. But the other person in the relationship might be thinking, whoa, like, I want to have some money that, like, we can spend.
Yeah.
That's not tied up in our house, right? And so you have to have that conversation, right?
Sure.
And that's going to affect a lot of other decisions you make on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So your book is called One Bed, One Bank Account. All right. So we're going to bring up this question, which is, I think it's so funny. It's like one of the most controversial personal finance questions that's out there. Whenever I've seen it brought up on the interwebs, or it's amazing. It's amazing how much people love talking about this.
Yeah.
All right. So one bank account or separate accounts? What's your guys' verdict?
One.
Yeah.
Just answer that in one word.
The book title kind of gives it away there. Right.
So why is that? Why one bank account? Why? What are the benefits of that for a marriage?
Yeah, so we are aware of the controversy. And so for us, our focus on the book, we're not we are focusing on relationship. And so for us, it's best to have more transparency. We think that unity is best, being on the same page is best. And for us, we just think that one bank account facilitates all of those things better. So it's not necessarily that that two is bad, but it's easier to get into your own world with two bank accounts. It's easier to, be spending without your spouse knowing about it. It's easier for things to be hidden. It's easier to not feel like you need to bring things up. Whereas with one, it's, we go through our bank account and Derek sees that I spent, $30 at Panera, and, that comes up and we talk about it. And for us, that transparency and that being on the same page, and us being comfortable enough to talk to each other about those things is important. Because if I feel like I can't bring things up, I can't bring up my desires, I can't bring up, the fact that I'm flawed and that sometimes I go over budget and, I'm afraid that Derek's going to go off the handle. That's a bad sign, not just for our finances, but for our relationship.
Yeah.
And so for us, it just facilitates oneness better. Of course, there are pros to having two. There are pros, to having one. But for us, the relational aspect is more important.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I mean, what are the pros? We'll be in all fairness. Let's look at it. We're going to be neutral here. But what are the benefits of two separate bank accounts?
Sure. So some would say that the benefits of two bank accounts are it sort of eliminates a lot of conversations. You don't have to say, hey, can I spend this amount of money on clothing this month, or this amount of money on going out to eat and all that kind of stuff. It some would argue that it does make things more simple. I've got my money, you've got your money, you take care of yours the way you want to, and I'll take care of mine the way I want to. And that's certainly understandable. But I would say that leaves out the fact that you don't have to have those conversations. Might sound enticing, but I would say that you're missing out on some stuff whenever you don't have to have those conversations, because you're keeping your bank accounts separate.
Right, right. Yeah. When you're talking about money, you're not talking about money.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Okay.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Kate and I, we have one bank account, and you're right. Like, you have those conversations. You're like, you know, for the most part, we kind of give ourselves like each like a discretionary amount that we spend each month. But whenever we are going to go over that, like, we have the conversation like, okay, hey,
right,
I'm going to spend a big chunk on this. Here's why I need to do this. Is that okay? We have the conversation about it.
Right.
But here's the question with one bank account that a lot of people have. And like, I have this problem. I don't know what to do about it either. Like, yeah. Gift giving. Right. Like, yeah. What do you, it's Christmas right. time. Like, you know, if you guys are on the same team or the same page with finances, you're looking, oh, here's this thing from Amazon. What did you buy at Amazon? Oh,
okay.
How do you handle that?
Okay. We actually get that question a lot. Like, everyone brings that up. And I got kind of maybe two answers to that. One, here's the quick and easy answer. You just go to your spouse and you say, hey, you kind of give it away. You say, don't check the bank account until next Thursday. I bought something and you'll see what it is. You know, it's a surprise.
Right.
You're just going to have to give it away unless you can somehow pay cash for it. But there's no avoiding that. So you just straight up say it, you know, but
yeah.
And that can, you can even turn that into a positive, because then they know that you've got them something and it's a surprise, and they, you know, you can kind of have fun with it. Right.
Sure.
Okay, so that's like one easy way to answer it. But the other thing is like that happens so infrequently, you know, maybe it's once a year or whatever, but it just happens, it doesn't happen often enough. And there are so many other benefits to having one bank account, that the fact that you might get discovered for buying a special present as a surprise, to me, that's just not enough, not even close to enough to, like, you know, blow up the whole or abandon the entire, you know, budgeting process, your entire financial life, you know, together. Well, I want to buy you a surprise every now and then, so we're going to keep separate accounts and forget everything else. It's just not enough to, you know, carry enough weight to convince me that having two bank accounts is worth it.
Right, right, right.
Then again, gift giving isn't your love language.
Right.
So.
Well, yeah, I never give gifts, so I never have to worry about that.
Easy for you to say, Derek.
Exactly.
Easy for you to say.
But a few practical things that we give in the book too. You talked about having discretionary funds, Brett, and we do the same thing.
Yeah.
And so one thing that you can do is just to build that up secretly. So if you give each other $100 a month discretionary, or 200, whatever it is, $50, you can build that up, you know, cash secretly, and then buy your gift that way. And then you can also enlist the help of a friend. And then you can also get Amazon gift cards. So if you don't want them to see exactly what the thing was, maybe you're buying, you know, a spa treatment, you can get an Amazon gift card that spends just like a credit card. So then they'll see that you spent money on the gift card, but they won't know what the actual thing is. So the actual gift is a surprise. So you can use the Amazon gift card, or Visa gift card rather, sorry, and go and actually buy the gift with that, as opposed to something that's going to show up on your bank account.
Oh, I see. I've never even thought of that. That's very sneaky.
Yeah, that's like some spy stuff right there.
See,
wow.
And that's, you know, okay, so that's for people who are in a healthy relationship. That's not to give people who are in an unhealthy relationship advice on how to
work around their finances.
Their spouse.
Yeah,
right, they yeah.
Could be used for good and for bad.
That is right. It is like, yeah, okay. You want to be the good spy.
Exactly.
So how do you, here's a problem. Okay, so you're on the same page financially, but there's going to be mistakes. One person in the couple might make just a huge boneheaded financial mistake. How should the couple manage that, right? What's the best way to approach when one person in the relationship has just made a boneheaded financial move?
Right. Yeah, that's a very good question, because that's going to happen. We're all human. We all make mistakes. It's just going to happen. So I've actually got an answer, and then Carrie's got something to add afterwards. The first thing, because it kind of depends on what you're saying. So let's say, for example, you set a monthly budget, and then throughout the month, let's say that I go over my restaurant spending allowance by $50 or whatever, you know. And then at the end of the month, it comes out, and I'm like, it's discovered that I went over by $50. Well, one way to address that is for Carrie just to point me to the budget and say, hey, instead of getting mad, that's what I'm trying to say, instead of getting upset and saying, you idiot, you know, you went over by $50. I'm so upset with you. I'm really pissed off, you know, all that kind of stuff. that I might not respond well to that because I feel like I'm being personally attacked. Even though I made a mistake, you know, making mistakes isn't fun, and then being attacked for it isn't fun either. But one thing that you can do is just point each other back to the budget and say, hey, we agreed to this budget, you remember, and you agreed to this. We both agreed to this, and then you blew it off and overspent. And what it does is it sort of turns the situation back on yourself. So you can't really get mad at your spouse when you're the one that made a mistake. And then you can use the budget as sort of like an intermediary, sort of like a, what's the word I'm trying to?
Intermediary?
Yes, intermediary. Yeah. Intermediary. You can use the budget kind of like that, in that way. And then Carrie's got another approach.
Well, I was just going to, I think that's great. But Brett, you did say a boneheaded mistake, which is different from ongoing, you know, just, hey, right. I don't care and I'm going to spend what I want. So that's different. And if that's happening, again, there are deeper issues than just a budget problem. So if that's happening, depending on what the situation is, maybe you even need to seek out counseling. Because if it's an issue where one spouse is just disregarding the well-being of the couple and of the relationship and of the desires of the other, then, you know, again, of course, there are more deep-seated issues than what can be solved by simply fixing your budget.
Right.
Well, great. This is all great information. Where can folks find out more about your guys' work and about the book?
Yeah. So our website is just derekandcarrie.com, and it's spelled D-E-R-E-K.
And C-A-R-R-I-E.
Wow. Yeah. And so that's where you can find out more about us and our podcast too, and the book as well. And the book is available on Amazon as well.
Great. And I'll mention too, you mentioned a couple times, you know, it's hard to start talking about money. We do have a free ebook that we give away called 4.5 Conversation Starters. That's kind of just a low stress, non-threatening, four and a half questions that you can get and start that conversation if it's been something that's been hard for you to do or that you're both uncomfortable with. It kind of gives you a little guide, and they're easy, just getting started questions just to get those conversations started. Yeah. And those are on our website if you sign up for our newsletter.
Great. Derek and Carrie Olson, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Brett.
My guests today were Derek and Carrie Olson. They're the authors of the book, One Bed, One Bank Account. And you can find that on Amazon.com. And actually, they have it right now. It's $3.99 on Kindle there. So pick it up. Great deal. They also have it available in paperback. And for more information about their work, check out their website, DerekandCarrieOlson.com. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And want to give you guys a heads up, I'm taking a break from the podcast until the new year. I'm going to spend some time with my family over the holidays, as well as get some much-needed R&R, and prepare another year of great podcast for you. I want to take this time to thank you all for your continued support of the Art of Manliness podcast. I really do appreciate the letters, the emails, the tweets you all send offering your support for the podcast. Thank you so much. My goal for next year is to continue adding value to you through the podcast, as well as finding ways I can improve the podcast so I can add even more value to you. So I'm going to do all I can to deliver on that. So thanks again. And until next time, this is Brett McKay wishing you a very Merry Christmas and to stay manly.